Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from France 24, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, NHK Japan, and Radio Havana Cuba. We will begin with France 24. A press review on the first annual World Day for Glaciers. Then European press reviews about the dangerous situation having J.D. Vance next in line to lead the U.S. based on his expressed hatred and scorn for Europe. While Trump talks about the inevitable annexation of Greenland, Vance is going without his boss to Greenland and now only to the U.S. military base there. Matt Quartrup tells some of the history of U.S. and Greenland interactions, including the accidental exploding of an American nuclear bomb there in 1968, leaving the area still contaminated with nuclear radiation. France 24.
The first ever World Day for Glaciers, and you found one particularly worrying study, Leo.
As reported by The Guardian this morning, glaciers melting could risk the food and water supply of 2 billion people, according to a new UNESCO report. Two-thirds of all irrigated agriculture in the world is likely to be affected in some way by receding glaciers and dwindling snowfall in mountainous regions. More than 1 billion people live in those mountainous regions. Of those developing countries, up to half are already experiencing food insecurity, which could be made a lot worse. Developed countries are also at risk, this piece points out. Le Monde have some more statistics, more worrying statistics this morning, telling us that the world's glacier mass shrank again in 2024. 5 of the last 6 years have seen the most rapid glacier retreats on record. And in 2024, all 19 of the world's glacier regions experienced a net loss of mass for the third consecutive year. Norway, Sweden, Svalbard, and the tropical Andes were amongst the worst affected. According to the UN, saving the planet's glaciers was now a matter of survival.
Europe, the Daily Star, the British tabloid here, has this quite interesting front page saying, is this the most dangerous man in the world? And the subheading highlights the urgency of their question, saying J.D. Vance could be president at any moment. Well, this outrage is also shared in Germany. Let's have a look at this German paper, Focus. They discuss in their article a real hatred of Europe and accuses the Trump administration of using mafia-worthy tactics. It also touches on the differences in policy between Vance and Trump, saying that Vance has once again proved himself much more aggressive towards Europe than his boss. In Italy, the broadsheet La Repubblica here, quoting Vance in their headline on their front page, calling Europe freeloaders or parasitic. If you're looking for a slightly different angle, the Libé today in France comes up with this front page looking at the impact of the Trump administration's hostility towards Europe in France. According to a recent study, more than 60% of French consumers would support a boycott of American products, and a third of French consumers try to actively avoid products associated with Trump and Musk.
U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance announced on Wednesday that his trip to Greenland this week will be confined to a U.S. military base and that he and his wife will not attend a popular dog sled race as originally scheduled. Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen had called the planned visit to the race part of unacceptable pressure by the White House on Greenland, which Donald Trump has vowed to annex. Her Foreign Minister Lars Løkke Rasmussen welcomed the move to revise the plans, calling it a de-escalation. Under a 1951 agreement, U.S. officials are free to visit the Bitufik space base without an official invitation. Here's Trump speaking yesterday.
We need Greenland for national security and international security. So we'll go as far as we have to go. We need Greenland, and the world needs us to have Greenland.
And for more on this, I can bring in Matt Kvortorp, who is a senior research fellow at the Centre for European Studies at the Australian National University. Good morning, Matt, and thank you for joining us.
JD Vance
made a very public announcement of this trip on Tuesday, and he rather quickly scaled it back to just visiting the US Batufik space base. So it seems he got a bit of a rap on the knuckles. Is this a humiliating climb down for the US vice president?
I think it's diverting attention away from the story you had before. But it is adding insult to injury. This is not just undiplomatic or against common decency. Also, Batufik is the place where in 1968 an American bomber crashed with nuclear bombs on board, which exploded. One of those bombs is still there. Means that the local population are not able to fish or hunt there. Lots of people were forcibly removed. So the agreement to have the Batufik base, or Thule base as it used to be called, was taken by the Danish ambassador back then without involving the people, the population of Greenland, the colony at the time. So to go to that place, a place that has been literally nuclear contaminated by the Americans, really explains why more than, well, close to 90% of all Greenlandic people or Inuit do not want to be part of America. What is also, if you like, insulting is that the Danes have sent 90 police officers from Copenhagen up to protect this, which of course is of the Danish taxpayers' money to pay for this uninvited visitor. Yes, the Danish government is trying to de-escalate this, but the fact that Trump is saying it must be ours is sort of rather reminiscent of what Saddam Hussein said about Kuwait in 1990, and it does. We are really living in a time which is frankly unbelievable. We sadly have to expect the worst. It's still sort of under wraps, the whole story about the bomb that the plane that crashed there. Technically, the Americans are not supposed to have nuclear weapons there, but they have been doing things in defiance of that. I think one has to prepare for what the Americans might do. There's a relatively small population in Greenland. It is a large territory, the size of Mexico, but for the Americans to physically invade, it would be very difficult for anybody, frankly, to do anything against it. I know the European Union is stepping up its efforts. Greenland, which is a thing that a lot of people don't know, it's part of Denmark in the same way as Scotland is part of the UK. But Greenland is not a member of the EU. Greenland, actually, in the early 1980s, had a referendum on leaving the EU. So they are sort of trying to escalate the talks to see if Greenland could rejoin the EU. And some people in Greenland, of course, want independence from Denmark, but under a sort of arrangement which is like an independent Scotland in a united Europe.
Thank you very much for that, Matt Kvortorp, Senior Research Fellow at the Centre of European Studies at Australian National University.
That report and press reviews were from France 24. France 24 may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, as well as most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. On to Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Denmark is introducing compulsory military service for women 2 years earlier than planned, and most other European countries are discussing expanding drafts or mandatory military training. The new Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney has remarked on the shift in relationships between Canada and the U.S. under Trump. A journalist, Emily Regelbert, discusses the changes in the political landscape since Trump has returned to the White House. Conservatives were widely expected to win the last election, but did not. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Denmark is introducing compulsory military service for women 2 years earlier than planned. Danish women who turn 18 after July 1st this year could be drafted from 2026 onwards. Men and women must now take part in an annual ballot from which names are drawn if there are not enough volunteers for the army. Denmark has also extended the duration of military service from 4 to 11 months. In February, it announced it was increasing its defense spending by 6.8 billion euros over the next 2 years in response to the rising threat posed by Russia. Well, for more on that, I'm now joined by DW reporter Roland Jodin in the studio. Roland, great to have you here. So firstly, how common is compulsory military service in Europe for women?
Not common at all. So you see, Denmark announced it today. You have a country like Sweden who introduced compulsory military service for women 8 years ago. And you have a country like Norway, not a member of the EU, though a member of NATO and, of course, European country, who introduced it 10 years ago. You have also other countries like Lithuania or Latvia who consider introducing it. Latvia, for example, says it considers introducing it in 2028.
Right. Well, what about here in Germany?
So when it comes to women and mandatory service, you would have to change the German constitution. For that, you need a two-third majority in the German parliament. We've just had elections here. The far right and the far left gained more seats. So the government will have a quite tricky time to form this majority. Actually, it's not possible because the far left has more pacifist stance towards military service and the far right would approve it. But all parties in the German Bundestag, the German parliament, ruled out to work together with the far right.
Right. So if we zoom out a bit from Germany, are more countries planning on reintroducing or introducing military service?
Yes. So short answer, yes, absolutely. Because you see, the story is after the fall of the Berlin Wall, after the end of the Cold War, most European countries felt safe and peaceful times, and they suspended their military services. Then the annexation of Crimea happened by Russia. Then the full-scale invasion of Ukraine by Russia happened, and most European countries changed course, invested more money in their militaries and spent more money for the militaries, and now we are at a point where we see Europe does not have enough recruits and soldiers. A high-ranking German military official, for example, said Germany lacks 20,000 active soldiers and up to 100,000 reservists. And that's why I think the question is not whether, but rather how Germany and other European countries will try to manage, get more people. And yeah, introducing the compulsory military service is one tool to achieve this goal.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating to see this situation that we're in at the moment happen again. Because, yeah, of course, when I was younger, there was military service,
right,
in Spain that was scrapped. And, of course, the same here in Germany, right?
Exactly.
DW reporter Roland Jodin, thank you.
Thank you.
To Canada now, where the country's new Prime Minister, Mark Carney, and his Conservative opponent, Pierre Poilievre, have begun campaigning for next month's general election against a backdrop of a trade war and annexation threats from Donald Trump. The US President has threatened tariffs on Canadian exports and has spoken multiple times about Canada becoming the 51st state. Carney has called the comments disrespectful and unhelpful. On the campaign trail, the Prime Minister underlined the shift in the relationship between the US and Canada.
In this crisis caused by the US President and those who are enabling him, we lament a friendship lost, or at least a friendship strained. But we celebrate the Canadian strength we have reclaimed.
All right, let's go to Toronto now and speak to journalist Emily Ragobier, who's keeping a very close eye on what's happening in Canada. The Conservative Party was way ahead in the polls, and then came Trump's second term. How has the political landscape in Canada changed since Donald Trump returned to the White House?
Pablo, since the U.S. president returned to the White House for a second term, it has completely changed the Canadian political landscape on its head. There's no mincing words there. I mean, just a few months ago, if we look back, when then Prime Minister Trudeau visited Mar-a-Lago, he visited then President-elect Trump at the end of November, you know, to smooth out the situation, knowing he's coming into office. At that time, the Liberals did not have a very favorable time here because Canadian Canadians are fed up with the cost of living here. Canadians are fed up with affordability, immigration issues. And really, after a 10-year pretty much mandate for the Liberals, the Conservatives seem like they were really ahead in the polls. And then, of course, now Donald Trump comes into office and it isn't entirely changed how Canadians view politics here. And as of today, the Liberals are ahead of the Conservatives in the polls for the first time.
Yeah, it actually is interesting that what you're saying there, because in the past, Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre used a style that was very similar to Donald Trump in his speeches, even using the same phrases. So has he now painted himself too much with the Trump brush, we'll say?
That's very true. I mean, the thing that is very true across the board for all the federal candidates is that this is a moment of change for them. This is the mandate is Donald Trump. That's exactly why, for example, the Liberal leader, Mark Carney, asked to dissolve Parliament. Today, Parliament was to resume. And of course, it is dissolved for a 37-day election. But he has always, the Liberals have always put Pierre Poilievre, the leader of the opposition, the Conservatives, paralleled with Donald Trump, saying that he is quite aligned with him. And of course, Pierre Poilievre has always looked towards the Liberals, saying, look where the Liberals have taken the country this past decade. And if you vote for Mark Carney, it'll be more of the same. But now it is about affordability. Really, Pierre Poilievre is trying to distance himself from that Trump mirroring and trying to really focus on affordability and those domestic issues. But really, the number one issue is which candidate will take on the U.S. president and these threatening territorial threats and obviously the tariff threats economically.
Journalist Emily Ragabir in Toronto.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. Deutsche Welle is also up at most podcast sites. Next, NHK Japan. Deadly, fast-moving wildfires have spread around Japan and South Korea. The South Korean Prime Minister has been reinstated after impeachment motions failed. More than 50,000 Palestinians, mostly women and children, have been killed by Israeli forces, and the IDF launched new attacks on Lebanon. A Palestinian correspondent for a Japanese newspaper was killed in Gaza, bringing the total number of journalists killed since October 2023 to 208. Israel warned that they will soon expand and intensify the onslaught. NHK Japan.
South Korean fire crews are battling to contain deadly, fast-moving blazes burning across parts of the country's southeast. At least 24 people have died since it all began last week, including some of those fighting to contain the flames. The wildfires are being driven by strong winds and fueled by dry conditions. Local media reports some people have been found dead on roads, suggesting they were caught by the fires while trying to evacuate. On Wednesday afternoon, a firefighting helicopter crashed in North Gyeongsang province, killing the pilot. Officials suspended air operations for 2 hours, hampering efforts to stop some wildfires from spreading. Four firefighters were also killed during ground operations in South Gyeongsang province. Weather conditions remain challenging and the number of people displaced by the fires is still growing. Meanwhile, three separate wildfires continue to ravage parts of western Japan. The first was sparked Sunday in Ehime Prefecture's Imabari City. More than 400 hectares have burned so far, including several homes and warehouses. Nearly 6,000 people have been told to evacuate. Another wildfire also broke out Sunday, this time in Okayama Prefecture. It had burned over 500 hectares across Okayama and Tamano cities as of 2 p.m. Wednesday. Residents of both have been urged to evacuate. It's grown to be the largest forest fire ever recorded in the prefecture. Finally, a third blaze broke out in Miyazaki Prefecture midday Tuesday. No injuries or damage have yet been reported. South Korea's prime minister has been reinstated as acting president after the Constitutional Court dismissed an impeachment motion against him.
The court said Prime Minister Han Duck-soo did violate the constitution by refusing to appoint judges to vacant seats on the court, and this was one of the reasons for his impeachment. But the court found Han did not violate the constitution in connection with the martial law declaration by President Yoon Suk-yeol. It therefore ruled there were not enough grounds to impeach him.
The development of the country is a really important matter for the future. I think this is my final mission. Together with all of you, I will strive to do my best.
Han became acting president after a motion to impeach Yoon was passed by the National Assembly over his martial law declaration last December. Han himself was later suspended after the assembly approved an impeachment motion against him as well. The court has not yet ruled on whether Yoon's martial law declaration violated the constitution. It held its last hearing on the matter on February 25th and has not announced when it'll deliver a ruling.
Palestinian health authorities say the fighting between Israel and Hamas in Gaza has left more than 50,000 people dead since October 2023. Meanwhile, the Israeli military has also been conducting airstrikes in neighboring Lebanon. Hezbollah strongholds and other areas have been targeted. Israel says the actions are in response to rocket fire. But Hezbollah released a statement denying any involvement in rocket fire from southern Lebanon. Reuters news agency has reported at least 8 people have been killed in the Israeli attacks.
A Palestinian correspondent for Japanese newspaper The Asahi Shimbun has been killed in the Gaza Strip. His house is believed to have been hit in an Israeli missile attack. The newspaper said that Mohammed Mansour, who was 29, died on Monday in the southern Gaza city of Khan Yunis. It said it had received information that his injured wife and baby son were being treated at a hospital. Mansour, a Gaza native, began working for the Asahi Shimbun in 2023, initially from Rafah. His role included sending reports and photos about developments in Gaza. The newspaper said in a statement that staff feel deep sadness and outrage at Mansour's death. It added that attacks against civilians, including journalists, are unacceptable under any circumstances. Authorities in Gaza say 208 journalists have been killed there since the start of the conflict between Israeli forces and Hamas in October 2023. Israel's defense minister says the people of Gaza should demand the release of all hostages and the removal of Hamas because it's the only way to stop the war. He made the comments as Israeli strikes continue and efforts to salvage a ceasefire remain deadlocked. Israel Katz's video statement was released Wednesday. He warned Gazans that the Israeli military will soon expand and intensify operations in the enclave. Katz says Hamas is endangering their lives, insisting people should rally against the group. Israel resumed attacks on Gaza just over a week ago after its ceasefire with Hamas collapsed. Health authorities in the enclave say the new round of Israeli strikes has killed at least 830 people, with the total death toll since the war began exceeding 50,000. Hamas says one of its latest casualties was a spokesperson killed by Israeli forces in northern Gaza's Jabalia on Thursday.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan. On shortwave, they're heard at 10 p.m. at 13710 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report, or could help support this program, like listeners in Littleton, Colorado and New York City did this week, there's a link for online donations available at my website, outfarpress.com, or you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Many, many thanks to everyone who's ever helped keep this freely distributed show in the airwaves. And if you're listening on the public radio station, they're soon going to have an even greater need for your support as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. The White House is developing plans to increase troops in Panama. The People's Congress said that kidnapping 238 Venezuelans without trial in the U.S. and sending them to a torture prison in El Salvador is an abuse of human rights. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The White House has reportedly ordered the U.S. military to develop plans to increase troops in Panama to help President Donald Trump's goal of recovering the Panama Canal. U.S. Southern Command is responsible for operations and security in Central America and is developing ideas for working with the Panamanian military instead of the less likely option of U.S. troops taking the canal by force. According to the Trump administration, recovering the canal is a part of a plan to reduce China's influence over the region. Panama and China have denied any foreign interference in the 50-mile canal. Chinese officials have accused the U.S. of coercing Panamanian officials to block aid projects from China. U.S. Southern Command Chief Admiral Alvin Halsey sent draft charges to Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth before his visit to Panama next month. The Southern Command has expressed that military action will only be necessary if Panama doesn't allow Trump to reclaim the canal. Trump said he wants control of the canal to eliminate the high tolls U.S. ships pay to travel through it. According to the People's Congress statement, the kidnapping of 238 Venezuelans by the United States government under illegal imprisonment in El Salvador is not only an abuse of human rights, but also reflects the advancement of policies that criminalize migration and justify the inhumane treatment of working-class migrants in the United States and Europe. The excuse used to justify these actions without prior trial is a alleged connection to the Aragua train, which serves to strengthen the political and economic agreements between the governments of El Salvador and the United States as part of a far-right bloc in the region. Meanwhile, the document emphasizes the history of crimes committed by Nayib Bukele's government against its own people, which has turned El Salvador into a laboratory of violence and police and prison repression. The text points out that detention centers such as Guantanamo Bay and now prisons in El Salvador are being used as international torture centers to criminalize and prosecute protest and poverty. This is part of a broader capitalist agenda that seeks to criminalize the migrant population of the Global South, treating them as enemies in war.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu. There's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon on Monday through Friday Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link. And get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 28th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. While I'm recuperating from a spinal injury, I'm staying in a house connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.